News.
New York City.
FAQ NYC podcast getting more and more interesting by the minute.
FAQ.
It's FAQ NYC, the New Yorkers podcast. I'm Christina Greer here with Katie Honan. Hi, Katie Honan.
Hi, Chrissy.
There's a lot to get into, so let's jump in with just some of the news from a truly jam-packed week in New York City.
Jury selection in former President Donald Trump's hush money trial begins this morning in a lower Manhattan courthouse. It's the first criminal trial for a president in United States history, and also the first of Trump's four indictments to go to trial. The former president has pleaded not guilty to 34 felony counts that include falsifying business records to allegedly keep stories about his sex life out of the public during the 2016 presidential campaign. That includes allegedly paying adult film star Stormy Daniels $130,000 to stay quiet. Last Friday, NYPD Commissioner Edward Caban released in a 259-word statement his decision to not discipline the two police officers involved in the killing of Kowalski Trawick in the Bronx as he held a knife in his kitchen. The Civilian Complaint Review Board sought to terminate officers Brendan Thompson and Herbert Davis for their role in the April 2019 shooting of Trawick. The commissioner said the CCRB's decision came after the statute of limitations, and the officers could only be disciplined if he felt their actions were criminal, which he did not. New York State still does not have a budget. That's your weekly update. And also last week, City Councilman Sean Abreu introduced a new bill to help control the rat population, using not poison or traps, but a different kind of birth control. Containing the rodent population without rodenticides will ideally have a better effect for other animals, including birds of prey like Flacco, who was found to have high traces of poison in his system when he either flew into or fell off of a Manhattan building to his death. Another beloved bird, Barry the Owl, also had high levels of rat poison in her system when she flew into a truck in Central Park in 2021. Chrissy, there is so much very serious going on today, but I wanted to kick things off with something you are very passionate about, birds. I know you wanted to discuss this new plan. We can discuss it in further, how this plan differs, how this birth control is supposed to be more delicious than the other birth control, enticing. Nice. So yeah, let's talk about birds before we talk about a former president on trial and NYPD issues.
Right. Well, you know, the thing about Flacco and with Barry the Owl, that when they were free, I think a lot of bird lovers knew that their time was limited to a certain extent because, you know, you'd see all these beautiful pictures of them posted up eating rats, but we know that rats have such high levels of poison inside of them. So yes, we're trying to control the rat population. Yes, I still stand by the fact that I think Eric Adams got elected partially on his stance on rats and being very vocal about getting rid of the rat population. I was literally just texting with a friend in DC this morning and she was complaining about rats. And I was like, funny, like, is your mayor talking about rats? Because our mayor was during the campaign season. And I think that's how we got across the finish line. So, you know, the new types of birth controls for rats, I mean, obviously we need to figure something out, not just for the bird population, which obviously I care very deeply about, but, you know, I hate seeing signs if you walk past housing projects where it's like, do not, you know, get on the grass, do not play on the grass, do not touch the grass because it's filled with rat poison. And I think that there's a larger, more complicated conversation to have about how do we protect citizens of New York, especially vulnerable populations who live in housing projects, who have very limited grasslands that they can't play on because there's so much rat poison around. So that worries me. And I know that, you know, talking to some people who were in the NYCHA world, I mean, they say because the housing projects are quite old, the tunnels around there are quite, the rat tunnels are quite substantial and creating all types of havoc for communities. So I know something needs to be done. I don't know. Maybe we need to have the rat czar on to see where she is with the progress.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, I think it is a multi-pronged approach. And this this bill sponsored by Councilmember Abreu, which, by the way, is part of a larger package of bills. This is just the first we introduced. The other bills right now, it's the sort of there's restrictions on city-owned and leased and operated buildings have to turn their lights off at night because that's another danger to birds, whether they live here or they're migrating through. What they think is, you know, they get confused looking at all these lights and they fly into buildings. You know, it's
That's a great piece of legislation that passed. Lots of cities are passing it, the sort of lights out legislation, especially during migration season.
Just thousands of birds die every year in New York City. And I know what this aims to do, this expanded bill would make it a requirement for all buildings. So, nearly all buildings, there are some carve outs, but, the dangers of, I write a lot about animals and, you might think in a city of 8.4 million people and so many horrible things going on, why do people have such an emotional connection to animals? But they just do. They react so strongly to what happened to Barry, to what happened to Flacco. I know a lot of people just got Flacco tattoos.
I know. Listen, I'm not going that far. But I think, I feel like it's a Gatsby type vibe in the sense that you remember when Gatsby would have these big parties and he was kind of alone and he would sort of be surrounded by people, but felt obviously very lonely. I think a lot of people in New York feel that way. You're surrounded by 8 million plus other people, but there's a level of loneliness that we saw obviously very palpable during COVID. So like animals provide this sort of sense of community for people in this like,
yeah,
you're constantly surrounded by individuals, but the human connection isn't always there. And I think, this is why New Yorkers, we have a disproportionate number of New Yorkers who have dogs in like tiny apartments, living close to the bone financially. But it's like, but you're going to spend money on an animal. It's like, right. Yes. Because it's cheaper than going to therapy every week. So, animals provide great support. Birds provide hope in a lot of ways. Now, let's shift gears because Flacco is sad, but it's not as sad as the loss of human life. Where, Katie, I'm just so frustrated and confused. Harry and I talked last week when you were on the beat, where I just don't understand how police officers' response to someone with a knife is a gun. I just don't understand where the lack of training is in this entire system. We were talking about, the 19-year-old in Queens who lost his life. His mother called because he was having a mental crisis episode, and the police, responded. He had a gun, they tased him, the mother intervened, and then he picked up the knife again and was shot and killed in front of his family. And I just, what kind of training do you not have to sort of see someone with a knife? Oh, or excuse me, he had scissors,
Oh, he had a serrated knife and a long stick. In the
Trawick case. In the Trawick case, a serrated knife and a long stick. And then in the case last week, it was a pair of scissors, like from Michaels. And I just don't understand why, the response has to be bullets. It's a tense situation. You don't know, et cetera, et cetera. But it feels like this over response consistently and consistently with people of color. Let's just be very clear. Like, we've seen footage of, white people evading police and police running after them and being very patient and all the things. So it all comes from the top, not just the mayor, but also the police commissioner. So like, we have the largest police system in the country. We've got the largest paramilitary organization in the country, borderline the world. Why do we have such a failure in training and understanding for mental health issues? I mean, it's just, it seems like it could be a lot less complicated than the NYPD is making it. And honestly, a lot fewer lives would be lost and a lot less money would be paid out to families. If we're, for people who only care about the money part of this, it's like we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year to correct the inappropriate behavior of the NYPD.
I think, looking at the two cases, and they're different, so it's hard to compare, but, in the case of Wynn Rosario, the teen who was killed in March in Queens, there are specialized officers who are trained in responding when someone's having a mental health crisis. In this instance, in Wynn Rosario's instance, they were not called to the scene. In the Trawick instance, it was two officers who, to my knowledge, were not trained for this sort of mental health intervention. He was living in an apartment that had services for people who have mental health challenges. I think looking at, I guess it's just the police feel threatened. And when these things, at least according to the NYPD, when these killings are, in their eyes, justified because the police were acting within their responsibilities to protect themselves, the body cam footage we still don't have the body cam footage for Wynn Rosario, which I'll note, when the police are challenged, like over the weekend, a woman who was arrested or detained at least at a protest, she said that the police knocked her hijab off. The police then released immediately almost body cam footage mm-hmm. from after the incident. So it's sort of mm-hmm. interesting to see how quickly we saw that what happened with Councilmember Salam, how quickly the body camera footage mm-hmm. was released when it's something like that, when it's to absolve the police from any criticism. Yet it's now been nearly a month and there's not been the body camera footage with release of the Wynn Rosario case.
I always find interesting about the body camera conversation is not just the hyper surveillance of communities, but when folks are like, hey, let's see the body cam footage. And then we see it's like, yeah, but you didn't see what happened before the body cam mm-hmm. footage, even though it has that sort of pre-delay and post-delay.
I think both say that.
It's always like, but you didn't see the thing before it really started. And it's like, well, then what is the point of all this hyper-surveillance if A, we can't get it, and B, you're going to sort of justify, well, it's like, well, there was something before I turned it on. I think for me, Katie, it's we pay a lot of money to have a lot of police officers and the larger overarching feeling is that a lot of people aren't feeling safer. And when you see someone in crisis, there's so few officers who are trained to have the skill set to deal with mentally challenged folks in crisis. And I don't know why they're not just doing that as part of the whole NYPD training. That's just me. But I think there's a lot of money being paid for this massive paramilitary organization. And I don't feel like calling the police would defuse a situation. I mean, I think this is the interesting work of like Erica Ford in Queens, right? Where they have like the peace sort of interrupters, if not peace interrupters, but like violence interrupters. Because she doesn't like to use the word violence. Peace kind of advocates, if you will. Because the philosophy is if we see something going down and calling the police, 9 times out of 10, it just makes it worse in particular communities. And I say that on purpose because it's like in particular communities, because we know the police don't wile out in certain communities. They know not to just pull out a gun on someone in particular communities. And so I think that's also this like imbalanced policing that I pay for as a citizen of New York.
And I think it just further, I think it creates a further gulf between people between citizens and the police. Mm-hmm. And people are afraid of what could happen to them, especially if you have any loved one who has mental health challenges, who, you know, if you see in the video, they're asking him to take down to put his knife down, but he's asking them, why did you come into my apartment? Mm-hmm. And of course, it would not be a big NYPD news story without the NYPD's top officials, including Chief Chell, going after journalists this weekend. This week, it was Errol Lewis going after him. sort of like, I guess they had done an interview with Dean Memminger and what Chief Chell was going on and on about was, this is what I was talking about at Dean, you know, kind of snitching on Errol, his co-worker. I mean, I don't know how you snitch on someone when it's all out in the public,
right?
Tagging and what New York won in it, going on and on about the narrative and we have to control the narrative, you know? And I think it's just, it again continues to create. It's doing the opposite of what they say they're intending to do. I will also note, and I tweeted about this last week, if we have any kind of doubts about what's real and what's real police work and what's for show, I was going home last Wednesday. I walked to the Times Square station. I was in Times Square. And who do I see outside but Kaz Daughtry, John Chell, Michael Kempner, Chief Kempner. It's Chief Daughtry, Chief Chell, Chief Kempner, the head of DCPI, another DCPI staffer. And then the mayor showed up. Wow. So I was thinking like, oh, I guess we're going to ride the train. I see this videos. I was wanting to go home, but they could have been going up to the top of the Bronx and I would have gone.
You're such a journalist. You're like, listen, we're going to Staten Island tonight, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Where are we going? I'm like, I'm going. Go down the station with them. Of course, I asked Chief Chell if he'd come on the podcast. He actually said he only would if Harry Siegel would publicly apologize for what he called was
that a ain't chief, happening.
Chief shot against Jeff. Captain. Anyway. We go down, the mayor goes down, films a video with some guy who I think is doing like an independent video on the NYPD, and then they went right back up to his car.
How much did that cost?
Is so funny. Like, this is, you know, you want to talk about safety on the train and you want to make such a big deal when you ride the train. You had how many top officials here right now for show? Right. Taking your pictures, a bunch of photographers. I was video taping and taking photos, obviously. You go down. I offered. I said, you guys should ride the 7 back with me.
Right.
See,
I mean, doesn't the mayor like to talk about tasting the product when he likes to go out at night? I mean,
yeah.
Test this product. Get on
ride the train.
Get on go to the train. right? Go on different cars. I mean, listen, if my students have to do it from our urban politics class, I don't understand why the mayor of New York City doesn't have to do it, right? I mean, my students have to ride the train from top to bottom. Pick a train line, right? Those who choose the A are like, what have I done? Right?
There's sometimes three they can take too.
Exactly. In my undergraduate class, they also have to go different places only using accessible stations. And then they realize only a quarter of New York City MTA stations are accessible. And so the dangerous elevators that don't work half the time. And so all the things. But I just, you know, you see this cluster of men in power who could easily go from not just the platform where we see all the police officers and now National Guard playing Candy Crush, but like ride the subway to see the person who decides to spark a blunt in the train car or another person who's like shredding all of their paper and rubbish and making folks feel uncomfortable. But I think part of it is, you know, when I see someone who's clearly disturbed, the very last thing I think of doing is ever calling the police on someone because I don't want on my conscience getting someone murdered. Because there's a really good probability that if the police get involved with someone who's having an episode, they could end up shot in front of me. So I think that's part of the frustration that a lot of New Yorkers have. And I'm curious to see how it'll play out in the Democratic primary, whether it's Scott Stringer v. Eric Adams or multiple people v. Eric Adams. How do you thread this needle, right? Which is, we talked about this last week when you were working. But Harry and I were saying, you know, the mayor, what everyone's been saying, you know, is it the safest big city in America or is it this hellscape that is, you know, danger zone and we're expecting, you know, the worst of like a Batman episode, right? But if you're in a Democratic primary, it's no longer 2021. We got to fast forward to 2025. So like, what have you done? And do you have a plan? Because I think a lot of New Yorkers really feel like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do as a New Yorker if I see something going down. Many people do want to call the police because that's what they're there for. And that's what we pay a gaggle of money for. But at the same time, we know that police are not trained to de-escalate a situation. They are literally there to escalate. And we've seen them escalate a situation. I mean, I literally saw a 16-year-old get arrested last week for jumping a turnstile. And I was like, is this the crime that you're really worried about?
I try to think of it from every perspective, too, whereas, you know, police officers on a daily basis, I don't mean the chief's tweeting, right? Everybody cop on the beat.
The people who are actually working, not the brass that are collecting high six figures and going after Harry and Errol all day.
They're seeing the worst of they're seeing people at their worst. They're, you know, I mean, you see videos of people cursing out. I would hate to be a cop in that situation too. And I think, okay. But then I think, why is it that, you know, someone with scissors, they tased Wynn Rosario and then they, I think he picked the scissors up again, according to the police reporting on it. Mm-hmm. But I just think, why is there not another option, right, in that? Why is there not another, why are they trained, like you said, not to de-escalate, but to just shoot and kill somebody, you know? And I think they were first called to Kowalski Trawick's home because he was locked out of his apartment. It wasn't that the situation that even got them there, were not violent at all. So that's, you know, I always wonder that of why is there not any other training to figure out another way to do that? Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunately, you know, and that's why I think a lot of people distrust the police. I mean, I will say the police, and they often tweet about this, is they say a lot of times people who jump the turnstile, I'm not saying this kid was, but people have weapons. So they sometimes, it's sort of like the broken windows idea of catching people who they think maybe have priors or they're hold, you know, they have weapons or drugs or whatever. But yeah, I think what people see a lot of is police not responding when they feel that they need them, but then they, you know, are arresting someone selling churros on the subway.
Right.
So unfortunately, that's what we have. But I guess now we can pivot to someone on trial, former President Donald Trump. I don't know if you have thoughts on that. I have not many thoughts, but I thought you might want to.
Yeah.
The huge traffic and the kind of pandemonium down here by City Hall.
Well, I mean, I'm curious if the Red Hats are going to try and come to New York City and act a fool, because they might mess around and find out that there's not really an appetite for their level of hatred. But really quickly, before we go to that man.
Yeah.
He's like a bad penny. I will say this. I think I'm of two minds, though, Katie, about the mayor riding the train. Largely because we know, A, the delays on the subway. Like, I think he should ride it every now and again so he can see what we're experiencing. But I'm not really into the kind of performance theater of, like, a mayor riding the train.
Yeah.
Largely because the delays and also oftentimes your cell phones don't work. So I'm like, I kind of need you to be above ground and like paying attention to what's going on and not sitting in between two stops like we are. I do think it's important that he and his staff ride the train to know and feel what we're feeling. But I'm not one of those people where it's like the mayor should be, you know, taking the 7 train to the next meeting. Cause it's like, guess what? He'll be late like everybody else. So that's just that. As far as the trial, you know, I think it'll be a very, I think jury selection is always fascinating. I've never called jurors or lawyers tend not to like professors. Did you know that?
That's good to know. I'm always afraid. I would hate to be on any jury. Yeah.
I mean, I
don't
just
know. Is that un-American of me?
I don't have the time. I mean, I do think that more sane-minded people should serve on juries. I just, you
That's
know.
That's nice of you to think that I'm right, the same.
You are. I'm a big fan. Big fan of Katie Hoonan. But they tend to not like professors just because I think they think that we can get in there and like change people's minds and be persuasive.
I used to think they didn't like journalists, but I know I have plenty of friends who are reporters who've been on like grand juries.
I think right now they're like, do you have a pulse and you're not, you know, clucking like a chicken? Sure, let's do it. I am curious to see what the composition will be, right? I can't imagine, you know, we know how Donald Trump feels about women. We know how he feels about people of color. We know how he feels specifically about Black people. So I'm curious as to what the jury, the composition of the jury will look like. And the types of, I know they're asking questions like, what podcasts do you listen to?
FAQ. You know, do you think they're going to have any?
I listen to FAQ. It's like, never mind. You know, they think I'm like left of Fidel. But, and Harry's persona non grata. So I'm curious about jury selection. I'm curious to see if his supporters, you know, come into the city. I know he's got lots of like quiet supporters here, but like, you know, the sort of loud, MAGA folks, I'm curious if they're going to show their support in New York City.
April, when he was in Manhattan, I mean, I had to cover it. That's when Marjorie Taylor Greene came.
Yeah.
That's where those infamous photos of George Santos in the crowd came from. Uh-huh. I mean, you had people driving.
To come in to show their support. I'm curious if, A, they'll come in, and B, will they act a fool? You know, like, I know that certain New Yorkers were like, nobody wants you here. Today's sort of the first kind of big day. Will the pandemonium in the circus die down, or is this just going to be the summer of chaos and mayhem? I'm not sure.
I mean, I think the estimated time is 6 to 8 weeks. You know, this is just from what my friends who are covering it. It's not, you know, this is our job to get up early and cover things, but I know it's no joy covering 6 to 8 week trial of this. And, knowing that we have a presidential election that he's a nominee for however many months, it's surreal almost that this is happening. But it's also, we've been used to it. You know, I think since the 2016 election, we're all kind of used to things that we thought were not ever going to happen are now happening. And behavior, I guess it's more the behavior.
Right. But see, I think this is the key point though, where it's like, we've grown accustomed to this horrible slippery slope because, you know, Donald Trump always denigrated the press. We had de Blasio tap dancing around, you know, kind of this, he never said fake news, but he liked to lean on that every now and again. And now we have not just a mayor, but a police chief who are sort of going down this same really dangerous road where if you say something I disagree with, then it's obviously you're a liar and it's fake. It's like, no, that's actually, you know, I'm not a journalist. I'm very clear that I'm not. These are Chrissy Greer's musings on a podcast. But like you and Harry are like legit journalists who actually, you know, have receipts on receipts with the stories that you write. You know, I write opinion pieces. You all write actual news stories. And to say that just because something is written that you disagree with is all of a sudden fake, and then you just start insulting people, I think that's the the quality of our politics has just declined so rapidly, where you have this like name calling and pettiness and really unprofessional behavior that I think Trump has made the norm. And we're seeing it now across both parties, which is really disturbing and quite frightening, to be very honest.
I mean, it's hard not to see shades of this in the NYPD's reaction to stuff. They are on this. It's the same message of Trump of I'm reclaiming, you know, as if the NYPD hasn't been powerful for years. Listen. Right. They're reclaiming the narrative. They're reclaiming things when in reality they've always been powerful. And any ounce of criticism. I mean, Chief Chell said to me last week that he wanted to put in a room. I don't think he meant this in a threatening way. His words, Yonan, he means Yoav Gonen, my colleague who wrote about him, and the uptick in police, deadly police chases, car chases. Ellen, who's a former colleague, Eileen, who wrote about him, and Harry, and he says he wants to go through all the lies that they publish. I said, just tell us now, you know, if you have an issue.
Right. What are the lies?
Yeah, and he says he knows everyone.
As we say, where's the lie?
Where's the lie?
And show then it to me.
He did the sort of thing that people always try but are usually wrong with. I know who the CI is. He meant confidential informant. I said, Chief Chell, we call them sources. But
right. I mean,
you can never guess a source.
But I mean, this is sort of like, you know, I don't want to use the word thug. I won't. But I just feel like this type of behavior coming from the top, right? So if you have Chief Chell behaving this way, what do you think his subordinates think is appropriate? You know? I mean, and like, fine, you don't see it as a threat to say, I want these three people in a room, but I do. Like, I find it to be wholly unprofessional that a police chief who, mind you now, I would think has bigger fish to fry with some of these numbers that are going up in particular communities, really sort of trying to intimidate journalists. I mean, I think this is where they've made a gross miscalculation. It's like, Harry's a New Yorker's New Yorker. So I'm like, if the accident didn't tip you off, like, you need to ask around.
Right.
But it's like, I don't think he's going to be like, oh, let me not write these stories anymore. The chief is mad at me, and so is the mayor. Like, that's actually not going to work. But I think that they're so used to intimidating people, or bullying people, they've sort of stumbled upon this kind of roadblock in their steamrolling of information that they can't kind of get around and like bully themselves out of. And all it's doing is exposing the very thing that everyone keeps writing about. Like, I don't know who their PR people are. I'm like, stop talking. Like, just stop talking. Because the more you talk, you know, it's kind of like Trump, basically. Every accusation is a confession.
Yeah.
So like everything you're accusing everybody else of doing, you're doing it right now. So like fall back. And just do your job. Because guess what? Doing your job well can actually make us sort of forget about some of this nonsense and mayhem. But all you do is you have extended one story well into, we're in like week three, are we not? Like, stop talking about it.
Are the listeners sick of hearing us talk about it? Well, too bad, because they're probably going to tweet again this week.
Right.
It's going to be a continual loop.
Be about it then. If you think that these stories are so false and this city is so safe, then make it safe. So then we can't talk about it. Like, I mean, and I don't think that anyone has an agenda in denigrating the NYPD. I would love to be on this podcast every week saying, I feel so safe around police officers. You know what? Like, I think when things go down, like, as a Black woman in this city, I feel like I can go to a police officer and ask them for assistance. I would sooner rather ask a random homeless person on the street for assistance than I would an NYPD officer at this point in time. Because I just don't trust that I would get courtesy, decency, respect, whatever's on the side of the car.
Professionalism, respect, CPR.
Professionalism. Chuh. So, like, no thank you. If they would just stop tweeting and insulting journalists and do their jobs, then maybe we can move the needle forward. And we know things, you know, when the weather gets hot, so do people. I would really like to think that they're focusing on what the summer months could look like, especially when kids are out of school, especially when the weather gets hot, especially when we have housing insecurity and job instability. Work on that, NYPD.
And that's it. I mean, you, the listeners at home can't see because it's an audio podcast, but I just heard in City Hall the opening 3 seconds of Empire State of Mind signaling that the mayor is near. They were testing the sound for his presser. I jumped out of my chair because every time I hear that song now, I have like a visceral reaction.
Is it the Alicia Keys, Jay-Z version?
That's his. And then he has, Lord, you know, the mayor, have you heard of the mayor does his own edited version where they edited in his audio clips. It's actually pretty fun. I mean, it's pretty funny.
Oh, gosh. The narcissism. I know I suffer from slight narcissism, but geez Louise, this is like
you gotta get a theme song.
What's my theme song?
Listeners, tweet to Chrissy what you think her theme song should be.
I have a few options, but
we'll talk about it.
I can't say the one air. Okay, so let's shift to some good news before I let you out of here. Go Knicks. Okay.
Oh, yeah. We got you caught to Hawaii the Knicks.
I'm the good luck charm. I'm just going to put that out there. Okay. Ever since I started going to games.
Slight narcissism. Go ahead.
Just ever so slightly. Just a drop. Just a small dosage. Ever since I started going to games, Katie, they win. I've literally only been to one game where they've ever lost. Okay. Now, I know that it's going to set me up for some strong failure. I'm a little sad that they're a seed too, honestly. I'm a little worried. You know, I was just talking to someone last night. Playoff Jimmy Butler is on some wildness. I don't know who this man is. He just turns into another character. Healthy Sixers make me a little nervous. Yeah. I'm wearing an Eagles sweatshirt right now. So
a lot of confusion going on with your sport.
Right. I'm all over the place. Listen, you know, I love Orioles, Phillies, Mets. Here we go. Oh, P.S. June 1 is Daryl Strawberry Day. I feel like I told Harry last week, I think we should do a field trip.
I couldn't go to Doc Gooden Day, but I would love to go to Daryl Strawberry
Day. Okay, well then, you know what? I'm going to start looking at tickets. I do like sitting in the visitor's box, though, because third base, that's the best, to me, the best view. So I say all that to say, I'm a little worried about round one. I'm not a Julius Randle fan. I've only seen him play like 2 times. Like, you can't stay healthy. So, I don't like sometimey people. I'm putting him in the sometimey category. I've been a fan of Jalen Brunson since last year. This whole little Villanova cabal that they've got going on. DiVincenzo can't, like, he can't miss when he's on fire. Like, I like Josh Hart. I'm just very happy. I'm very happy to be a Knicks fan this season. And, I'm jazzed.
I'm going to watch because, as you know, I don't follow the NBA. I'm a college basketball fan. And we did not discuss on the podcast the way that the Big East and St. John's University, my team, were slighted in the tournament selection. That's in the past.
Okay.
And I was so mad about it. I actually,
you know, I don't mind dredging up old stuff.
I was rooting for UConn because I wanted, to me, even though most of the, there's only one New York City team in the Big East, I find it to be like an attack on New York City because it's like the rest of the country hates New York. They hate that we have the tournament at the Garden. They hate our success. They just hate us. So anyway, that's that. But I'm going to root for the Knicks. I don't follow the NBA. I have no, but when I was a fan, I was a New York Knicks fan.
I already had playoff tickets. I was like, what is your refund policy for round two? I was like, I'm buying all these tickets.
You know how many Mets playoff tickets I've bought that
I was like, dealing with Dolan, I need to make sure. I was like, can I get this in writing? Make sure you run me my money back just in case they don't make it. So I am a little worried about this number two seed. Like, yay, exciting. But on the other hand, I'm like, ugh. I was hoping we'd get a little Pacers-Cavs action. I'm excited for New Yorkers. When New Yorkers are excited, I'm excited.
I love it. And I saw someone post if like the Rangers make the playoffs and can the city really handle? It's like 94 again.
Yeah. Or what about that Subway Series? When I first moved back to New York and they had the Subway Series with the Mets and the Yankees, I don't think I fully understood like the level of excitement. It was huge. I went to a Yankees game.
And I still have my t-shirt. I always talk about this. I'm a t-shirt collector, which is the way that I'm, instead of using the word hoarder, I think my dad said he bought it off some guy in the Bell Parkway.
My mom has done this for different friends of mine whose parents have passed and also people who were t-shirt collectors. She makes them a quilt out of their t-shirts.
No, but then you can't wear the t-shirts.
Oh, you like to still wear the t-shirt?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I could still fit. I mean, I kind of joke, like, I guess I was this fat in 1999, but because
I was just saying, I actually have t-shirts where it's like, they're like, hey, sis, guess what? These aren't even for around the house. No mas.
All right. On that note.
All right. Go Knicks.
For the listeners at home, send us your favorite song that could be Chrissy's theme song or your favorite New York City themed t-shirt. It sounds like I'm really clawing for engagement, but all right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
FAQ.
FAQ NYC is the flagship show of the forthcoming FAQ NYC podcast network. We receive support from P&T Knitwear, an independent bookstore, cafe, and event space on Manhattan's Lower East Side, with a podcast studio that can be freely reserved for community use. The pod's friends include The City, a nonprofit newsroom where journalists, including our Katie Honan and Harry Siegel, deliver hard-hitting news that serves the people of New York. The Colin Powell School at CUNY City College, where I am one of the Moynihan Public Scholars inaugural fellows, and Flaming Hydra, a collective of 60 writers, including Harry, delivering a cooperatively owned new newsletter you'll actually want to read. Our engineer is the inimitable Adam Kamara, and Harry is our executive producer. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us and making it this far. Be kind, be cool, be warm, I think, and we'll be back soon with more.